Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of people from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished marketing guru from Dubai, UAE, Mr. Soumya Saklani. Soumya, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you. Soumya is the managing director of Kantar for the West, East, and Central Africa region. So Soumya, let's talk branding and analytics today.
Sure.
With so much experience with iconic FMCG brands, what goes into building a successful brand?
So, you know, that's an evergreen question, Ashutosh. And I think what we've seen over the years, and I speak from a Kantar perspective as well as, you know, working on brands myself, is any brand that needs to be successful in the long term needs to start with the brand purpose. Mm-hmm. With a very clear brand purpose that is like the foundation for the brand, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good solid foundation, then you know you'll always have problems with your mm-hmm. with your house. So mm-hmm. the analogy is the starting point is always a strong brand purpose mm-hmm. that seeks to deliver a meaningful benefit to the consumer. This could mm-hmm. be functional, this could be emotional. That is different from what other brands are offering in the marketplace, right? So the starting point we've always seen is if, and we monitor brand health over a period of time, you know, new brands, established brands. If the brand doesn't have a clearly defined brand purpose that connects to a real consumer need, then we are starting on the wrong foot, so to speak, and the brand will always continue to struggle. So that's the first foundation. You know, we used to say this many years ago. I don't know if this is still a phrase used much. Is there is there a gap in the market? And is there a market in the gap, right? So is there a particular need, consumer need that is not being met by existing brand? And is that need large enough for a brand to play a meaningful you know, role in? So that's the first, I guess, starting point. The second thing that we observed, and I've observed as well, is, you know, brands that tend to have a longer term view of and a longer term commitment. And this is basically two things. One, they have a longer term view and commitment of brand building. So, you know, obviously the pressures on quarter by quarter, you know, your sales numbers, your metrics, those are real pressures. But brands that maintain a level of presence in the marketplace, connecting to consumers, ensuring that they are not going light on spend, on marketing activities and spend. I mean, there is this classical measure or metric that we still use today, where it says that if your share of voice is equal to or greater than your share of market, you will grow. You will, or you will maintain. But if your share of voice is lower than the share of market, chances are you will decline, right? So that long-term view commitment means continue to invest in your brand, just like you would continue to invest in your own health, for example, with regular exercise, right? And the second point under that is consistency of brand promise and communication. So, you know, we've seen sometimes a brand where, you know, we look at it at brand tracking and we see the brand means nothing. There's no one or two things the brand means to consumers. You know, the brand is trying to be everything to everyone, and hence is losing the connection with consumers. Well, consumers can't figure out, should I use this brand because of this or that, right? So those are the two kind of key ingredients that we see going into you know, establishing and maintaining a successful brand.
Very interesting. So, Soumya, you are also the lead for holistic brand guidance for your organization. When I was reading about you, I was a little intrigued. What is holistic brand guidance?
So, you know, it's a term that we use. So, first of all, you know, Kantar, the organization that I've worked for, you know, for a number of years in my 30 years, possibly 20 plus years, we, for the last 50 years, that's what we've been doing. We've been working with brands and we've been advising clients how to develop strong brands, maintain strong brands, and strong communication. So, we've been doing what is called in consumer research terms brand tracking, you know, since the 70s. And this goes back to the founders of our company, right? So holistic brand guidance is like a next generation framework or philosophy for measuring how a brand's health equity is evolving and tracking that over a period of time with the audience that matters the most, which is the consumer. So the consumer is the person who buys your brand. What is the health of the brand amongst amongst consumers? So that's what it is. Breaking that down into what it really gives, or what, how do we measure the strength of a brand? Over the years, we've developed different frameworks. So this is like the next gen, framework that we use, where a brand needs to be meaningful to a consumer. So why should a consumer buy a brand? Brand needs to be meaningful. It needs to fill an emotional or a practical need, a rational benefit. It feels better, it tastes better, it makes me more healthy, and an emotional benefit. I look better, I can do other things in life, I don't have to worry about my health. So meaningful. So it needs to be meaningful. It needs to be different from other brands in the market. And that's a very strong factor, particularly for new brands starting out. So meaningful, different. And the third kind of leg or pillar is salient. So if I think of butter, for example, and if I ask an Indian consumer, what brand comes most easily to their minds, to be, I would hypothesize, Amul. And that's the power of salience. So you need a brand to be strong in all three, or more in one, and on equal terms on the others, for it to be successful. You know, this framework tells you if there are triggers and barriers in the market that are getting in the way of actualizing your brand potential. So if your brand has the ability to command a 60% share of mind, and your market share is 40%, why is that 20% not coming to you? So triggers and barriers, and it's holistic in the sense that it tells you what you need to do now. So, you know, activation, from an active, is it distribution, is it pricing, or more holistic in terms of brand building. So short term and longer term levers of activity that you can do to strengthen your performance. So that's really, you know, it's very next generation brand
driving. And, you know, you've articulated this so well. I've often said brands are living beings. They're like children. You know, they need constant intervention. And yet, in the digital world, there are so many new things happening to every brand. So much is being bombarded on every brand. I'd like to understand, how are brands coping in the digital world?
So again, I mean, I think all this is something that is still relatively new in the whole, kind of, if you look at branding and brand building, this is something that's kind of come in the last 10 years and so, and really increased since then. It's an exciting and challenging world. I think, I started in the old times when it was static, brands, did one or two campaigns in the year and they were planned in advance and things like that, versus now where a brand has to be 24/7 on. And hence, there is a danger. So the good thing is that there are a lot more levers to push and pull. So earlier it was just traditional media, below the line, above the line. Now the digital world, has two different dimensions, has the e-commerce dimension where you can connect and sell through this channel, which is increasing obviously with the pandemic as well. But importantly, and this is where most marketers don't understand or realize the power of this whole digital world, it is a channel to influence, it is a channel to inform, and when we look at how consumers behave, they will sometimes buy something online. And that's fine. That's a straight path, into purchase, into the end goal. But sometimes they will research and they will still go to a traditional, shop and buy. So brands need to understand that the e-commerce or the digital world is a lot more about ensuring that your visibility and presence in the digital world is in harmony with your presence and your propositions and everything in the offline world. And indeed, that consumers can look at reviews and ratings, because that's what consumers are now able to access. They can look at prices. I was in a shop in December in Delhi, and a man walked in and he asked for a little charging wire for a mobile phone, and the shopkeeper said, this is for 300. He said, no, this is actually for 250 on this site. And so that's where you are facing, as both a retailer and as a brand, challenges and opportunities, right? So it is an exciting world. It's a more level playing field world. So big brands earlier, you could rely on the power of your brand, the power of your distribution and your network and your years and years of brand building and awareness and saliency. And here comes today a small player who is listed on Amazon, for example, and they can start eating your share. So it's an exciting world. Absolutely.
Which then brings me, Soumya, to the next question, which is the brand manager. You know, when we were all growing up late 20s, early 30s, the role was very different. You know, it was coordinating with production, making sure the goods were as we needed, working with your finance people and the marketing director on pricing, working with the agency to make sure that the communication was okay. And then distribution was a small part of it. And then every time the marketing director was visiting the market, the brand manager's job was to make sure that his products are very prominently displayed. So the marketing director feels that today, with digital media, with large e-commerce platforms, I'd love to get your perspective on how has the role of the brand manager changed?
So, you know, as you were saying, you know, earlier, more static, more predictable, you know, limited levels of influence and control, and fast track to today. Again, I think it's a fantastic time to be in the role of a brand manager if you really want to learn things, 24/7 and 360 degree. I think there are some pressures on a role on the brand manager of today's world, and that is. Balancing, I think, the short term versus the long term. So there is both a short term pressure on sales because now everything can get monitored really in real time. Otherwise, you know, the good old retail audit or consumer panel report or would come once every 3 months. You know, you'd get sales feedback from your people on the ground once every month or something like that. Now it's real time. So so where it is challenging is that the brand manager now has to work with a lot of short term. Pressures or inputs that they need to react to. But this is where the role of the brand manager as a brand custodian for the number of years that they are managing the brand is also important. I think earlier brand managers had the liberty to be a more strategic and less tactical. Today they have to balance this tactical short term, what do I need to do for the brand now versus still brand building, because again, our research has shown over the years that the power of the brand is not going away. Brand building is still important, and the role of the brand manager is like he's the brand, he or she is the brand custodian. He's like the police, he or she is like the police to kind of say, guys, that's fine, but I still need to, you know, invest in building my brand because look at what's happening to my equity or my imagery. And I should resist the urge to reduce the price by 30% because the competitor is doing it, because that will hit me in the long term. So there's that pressure. There's obviously overload of information as well. And this is where you need to be in a mindset where ideally you're supported by your research partners in a manner where they are able to show you the metrics that matter, you know, in dashboards. You can very quickly look at numbers and very quickly make sense of green, yellow, orange. My sales are going down, but that's because of, is it a distribution problem or is it a pricing stock out problem, or is it a a consumer image issue that's happening, and so forth. So you really are. It's almost like you're a pilot in the modern airplane and cockpit, where you're looking at all these controls and adjusting real time.
Very interesting. So before I move to another section, I wanted to ask you one more question. You know, there are some brands that last 100 years and continue to be occupying, you know, the top of the mind share for the consumer, the share of top of the mind of the consumer. And there are some which have an incredible run for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then they die out. What is the differentiating factor between sustainable brands and brands which are like a flash in the pan?
So, I mean, we talked about brand purpose, and that's a factor. We've talked about a long-term view and commitment. That's another factor. I think what we are seeing is innovation. So innovation has always been important, but in today's world, you know, competition can come from anywhere, anytime, very quickly, particularly as you talked about the digital world. You can have a small player suddenly eating your share, and you can have a number of these small players eating your share. Earlier, it used to be one competitor that I need to deal with. So brands need to be constantly innovating, and they need to be innovating through understanding, through having a finger on the consumer pulse, you know, where are consumers going, focusing on next-gen consumers, by the way. I mean, the danger is sometimes that people marketers look at their current user base, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But, you know, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now, this millennial, youth population is going to be becoming more mainstream in your category. Mm-hmm. How are they evolving? What do they need from, I don't know, a hair care, mm-hmm. a mobile phone, and so forth, right? So it's trying to look ahead and understand where the future is going with consumers that may not be your core consumers today, mm. but will be, you know, will be tomorrow and thereafter. And always maintaining a point of difference. So always, your differentiation is like, you can be salient, mm. You can be meaningful, mm. but you are not different from any other brand. And we find big brands have that problem. They, over a period of time, they rely on their salience. Oh, everyone knows me. Mm. And I'm very strong. And we see this in our tracking, you know, brand health tracking. The big brands, they tend to fade when they become very big and salient. Mm. And then we see their meaningful and their difference numbers go down. That's a classic telltale sign of a brand in trouble.
Amazing. So moving on, I'd love to get your perspective on how important is analytics for a brand manager and for brand building.
So, you know, analytics has always been around in some shape or form for a number of years. So one of the things that people, we all kind of think is, oh, analytics is a new buzzword. Not necessarily. I mean, there are new age analytics, which are tremendous. And there are analytics that have been around for years. So the role and the availability of analytics has always been there. For example, if you're coming up with a change in your product, you know, and your brand offer, and price is one of those things, then you have an analytical solution called choice modeling, which will tell you how to optimize your product offer and price in a manner that you gain, not lose. We still find a lot of product launches or product tweaks happening mm-hmm. without really marketers doing the due diligence on this front. I mean, it's still a lot on, oh, it has worked in that market, or I think, you know, gut feel, right? So even for the, I would say, base level analytics that have been around for years, market mix modeling, total marketing ROI, you know, these have been around for years to tell you which marketing lever is doing what in terms of your brand performance. They are still not yet fully adopted. But to your question, there's a lot of exciting marketing analytics, AI driven and, you know, machine learning driven that's available now. And you know, things like you can do trend forecasting. So if you're, you know, looking at your brand awareness, or if you're looking at a key brand metric, like is my brand, does my brand taste better? Does my tomato ketchup taste better? And you've invested in some activity to try and increase that in the market, you can now do forecasting, trend forecasting. So you can say, based on where I am right now, if what will happen in the next 3-6 months, mm-hmm. and you can simulate in real time. You can move your levers, and this is available. This is available now. So there's a lot of this new age analytics that's coming in. The pandemic has accelerated this to an extent, but I think even right now, the contribution of analytics to the total consumer research and insight industry is still far low.
Mm. Yeah, I remember when, you know, in my ITC days, and I'm like a dinosaur, but I'm talking of the early 80s, the computers hadn't come in.
Right.
And there used to be 13 column sheets. And, you know, every month you'd painstakingly write down numbers of how the product is performing, different markets, etc. So you're right. Analytics has been there, but now it's become far, far more in use because of all the other tools, isn't it?
Right. Absolutely.
Fascinating. Absolutely. So my next question to you, and I think I have time for only one more question with you. One of the fallacies, especially in markets that you are in, you know, and I've often heard this, the Middle East is one market and Africa is one market, and you're sitting in two of the most complex markets. I'd love to understand from you, what is the impact of culture on brands, and how do brand managers in such diverse markets as the Middle East or Africa handle communication and different requirements?
So you're absolutely correct. You know, we've seen, again, because in Kantar, we test, so not only do we measure the same brand across multiple markets, but we also test advertising creatives, you know, in multiple markets. So let's say an MNC, a client of ours, it could be Coke, it could be Unilever, you know, has a campaign, and that campaign runs across multiple markets, and we test. So, I mean, we globally, only about 40% of creative ads perform the perform well in another market. So that simply tells you, and that's true across the world, that simply tells you that the culture plays a strong role. You know, what is humorous, what is relevant in one market is different from the other. And your question about, you know, the Middle East and Africa, I mean, Africa is 54 countries. People look at Africa as one. Africa is 54 countries. And I can tell you from experience, having lived in Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria, and worked across the continent, a Ghana and a Nigeria are right next to each other. But there are poles apart in terms of culture. So Nigeria is a lot more, you know, there's a Hofstede dimensions, which is very, very, very useful as a way to map different cultures. Nigeria is more individualistic, more more ambitious, more masculine, whereas Ghana is more community oriented, less, you know, less keen on things changing very quickly. So clients will come to us and say they've got a brand or a product, and or they've got an ad. And can I, you know, it worked in South Africa, which is Africa. Can I, you know, run it in Kenya or not? And we test and we show results polar, you know, polar opposite. So culture does play a strong role in ensuring your brand is relevant in the context. And we actually see local brands doing very well in Africa and the Middle East because they are local, they are more able to, you know, fit the context real time in terms of evolving consumer evolving consumer attitudes a lot better than some of the international brands.
And it'd be interesting to get a perspective on some examples, maybe from Africa and the Middle East.
Sure. So I can tell you that, you know, there are, if you go to Nigeria, for example, the and the big multinationals, Unilever and P&G, they have their, so in the detergent category, for example, they have they have their brands there, which they've been building and investing for years and years. But the leading brand is a brand called Soklin, which ironically is from Indonesia. And the reason they've been able to do to be very successful is because they have adapted their brand into the local market a lot more nimbly than what a big player like a Unilever or P&G could. And like that, there are hundreds of examples local brands.
Swami, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me on branding and analytics in so much detail. I mean, took me down memory lane for God knows how many years ago. And you helped me to actually up my knowledge and understanding so much because every day things are changing in the world of branding. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.